Hey, Saints and my beloved Aints.
What's up with y'all?
How are you today? I don't know where you are, if you're in your Kia, your Chevy.
Or your Benz.
Or that.
Because Saints got Benzes.
Yeah, they do. Or, you know, you washing dishes with a rag or with a sponge. I'm not sure. You know, we got a dishwasher that I don't like using our dishwasher.
And I love using our dishwasher. I don't know why you don't.
Because it feels as if I low-key have to wash the dishes to put them in the dishwasher. It feels counterproductive.
You don't. All you gotta do is just spray it
but
down a little bit.
But you do.
We've had this conversation before. All you gotta do is spray it down a little bit.
I might as well add some soap in this. Just go ahead and do it.
It's so time-consuming, man.
I guess. I just might as well just clean them myself and then put them on the side and that'd be that.
Whatever.
But I get it. Anyway, how are you? You've been having problems with pollen.
Pollen is evil.
You think so?
It's really evil.
You've been struggling.
Like, I don't understand, like, why God had to, like...
We're not going to blame God.
We're
not going to be like Adam. That's what we're not going to do. Hello?
It's just, I hate spring.
Because he has provided Allegra. There is a ram in the bush, a ram at Walgreens, in the name of Claritin D.
Whatever, man. It's such a horrible season for me. My throat itching. I don't know where that banging sound is coming from, Jesus. But yeah, my throat be itching, my eyes be itching, and I'm just like, what is happening?
Yeah, you look a little crackish.
Whatever, dog. Don't talk to me like that.
You look a little crackish. Anywho, we've been having, you know, guests this time around.
And today we have a special guest who's listening to our foolishness right now. I'm excited about this guest because
you should be.
Yeah, man. If anybody that knows me personally have heard me talk about this man probably once or twice. As you know, I love apologetics. I love engaging with different worldviews, and I love learning about different worldviews and evangelism. And so this guy, man, he has challenged me and inspired me so much in my Christian faith and my Christian walk. And so our special guest today is Eric Mason,
yeah.
Pastor Eric Mason.
Let's do tongue applause. He shut that back here, shut that back, call shot. Tongue applause.
What's up, brother? How
What's
you doing?
Up, y'all? I'm so glad to be on here. How y'all doing?
Chilling, man, chilling. So let's get right into it. You just recently wrote a book called Urban Apologetics. I've heard so many people talk about it so far. I saw Dr. Tony Evans talking about it the other day. Another giant in the faith. Tell us, what is urban apologetics and why you felt compelled to write
this
book?
Can we back up real quick?
Okay, yeah.
Because some folk don't know who Eric Mason is.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I be assuming everybody do because I know. Who are you, Eric Mason?
Because he got your number in his phone, so he think everybody is connected in the same way. Give us some context, Pastor.
Well, my name is Eric Mason. I'm the husband of one wife.
That's important.
Born and raised in Washington, D.C. During the crack era, the crack epidemic. And I am also, I have four living children. I pastor Epiphany Fellowship in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, global church planter, planted churches from Malawi, Africa to South Central L.A., New York, a lot of different places, about 44 churches. Wrote five books and excited to be on here. Oh, Thriving, Lead Thrive, President of Thriving and President of the Enoch Network.
Amen.
That's about it.
All right.
So let's get to this question that I asked before she rudely interrupted me. I'm excited about this book.
I helped you, actually.
I'm excited about this book, Urban Apologetics. And so what is the book Urban Apologetics, and why did you feel compelled to write it?
Well, the premise of the book is really more in the subtitle than the title. But the big title is kind of what kind of gets captured. It's Urban Apologetics, Restoring Black Dignity with the Gospel. And the reason why we wrote the book, was the general editor. I wrote maybe four or five chapters in it and had a team of experts on it. And so urban apologetics is really a subgenre of apologetics in which we contextualize answering the questions of African-American people, and specifically that's influenced by Black ideologies and Black cults that pervade urban areas. And now we know urban is not just, it's not a look, it's not a geography anymore. It's a culture that travels beyond a geography now. So, so yeah, that's why in a nutshell, what urban apologetics is. And, you know, why we wrote it in order to really help the people to have answers. I mean, I was in college in the early 90s. So, you know, when you went to college back then, you talking about you're a Christian, that wasn't going to fly. Mm. And so everybody's like, it's illogical to be a Christian and be Black. And so that's been a folklore for the last 50 to 60 years.
Wow.
Prior to the civil rights movement. So those questions haven't been answered in years. So we're trying to dive into that.
Would you say that experience, like in school, is what like developed a desire to contend in like urban spaces, or is it like your time as a pastor? Like, I guess what began that?
Yeah. Yeah. It was interesting. It's always when I became a believer, November 15th, 1992, you know, you had hip hop was in a way different place than it is now.
Yeah.
You know, it was a lot of hostility towards Christianity, whether you're talking about leaders of the New School, Poor Righteous Teachers, A Tribe Called Quest, Public Enemy, all of those different, you know, groups. This is just a few, Black Sheep, whoever, and the Nation of Gods and Earths was influencing everything. And a subsidiary of the Nation of Islam that believes the Black man is God and the woman is the earth. And it still, you know, has those who are influenced by it today. And so I always, as a Christian, Black Christian, really felt like, because there's almost a cultural assumption that Christianity is the white man's religion among lost African Americans, I felt like I was always on the defensive of having to explain why in the world is it logical for you to be a Christian. So it's kind of, and then it comes in waves. So every 20 to 30 years, it reinvigorates itself to Blacks being aware, why are we even Christians anyway? Mm-hmm. Or fighting against racism. Whenever you see fighting racial injustice in America, you always see parallel to it, people viewing Western Christianity as a partner to the racism that they're experiencing. Mm-hmm. Therefore, in their mind, making it illogical for them to say, how can you be a Christian when you're the religion of your oppressors, as they would say it. So in pastoring, because I pastor a ton of millennials and Gen Zs, and so in pastoring that's all I got in my church. I maybe have, 30 people above the age of 50, you know, and so, or maybe 40 above the age of 50. And so in light of that reality, I'm always, this is the inquisitive generation. And so so it's forced from a pastoral standpoint. I can't leave it out of the pulpit either, or our discipleship.
Yeah,
that's dope. That kind of brings you to my next question is, how do you think white supremacy has opened the door for the Black conscious movement?
And somebody explain Black conscious movement, because not everybody even knows what that conscious. You mean like our conscience, like it's been clean because of Jesus?
Yeah, so maybe Eric, you can explain what the Black conscious movement is, and then you can kind of explain, you know, how has like white supremacy kind of opened the door for that, these movements?
Good question. So the conscious community is the original thief of our understanding of what it means to be biblically woke, biblically conscious. W.E.B. Du Bois talks about his double consciousness of Black people in his book. I talk about it in Woke Church, but of Black people in his book, The Souls of Black Folk. And he was discipled by a pastor named Alexander Crummell, who's the father of Pan-Africanism. And so in their mind, when they came up with the double consciousness theory and what we now call woke in its more biblically rooted Ephesians chapter 5, 4 through 16 disposition, you know, it meant being aware to God's truth, and it mean all also being aware as it takes on, but specifically in the area of racial injustice. His double consciousness was more sociological. From that came the Black consciousness movement, which kind of stole from all of the Christian historians, the Black historians that were Christian. I mean, if you look at Frederick Douglass, Ida B. Wells, Sojourner, all of them were Christians, you know? And so what they ended up doing in the 50s and 60s is hijacking that. And later on, that became Black Panther movement to the 70s, you know, and then to the 80s, they became this conscious movement where they don't even realize that they're really a subsidiary of us. They just stole it and hijacked it for ethnocentrism versus both the ethnic identity that's valued by the Imago Dei and Christ changing and framing you and restoring your identity. Black conscious community is now a bunch of like different groups now, from Kemetic groups, Yoruba spirituality, Black atheism, Hebrew Israelites. I mean, anything that's a kind of a, has a, as its base, Black identity is the Black conscious community. So that's the long and the short of it in a very, very compact way.
I ain't never heard that in my life.
Yeah, that's deep. And so my second part is because what I've been seeing, what I've seen in mostly all of these, you know, Black conscious movements, because I grew up around Hebrew Israelites, Moors, Black movements like this, right? Muslims, and they always tend to talk about how Christianity is the white man religion, you know, and so it kind of seems as if a lot of these movements are fueled by white supremacy. And so, like, how do you, like, what would you say? What would you say in terms of how the white supremacy has given birth and opened door to a lot of these, you know, conscious movements to even exist in the first place?
Mm. Yeah, for me, when somebody says Christianity the white man's religion, I say you saying that is a response to white is a basically a work of white supremacy.
Yeah,
I said because white supremacy gave you that like, if you even did any kind of history, you would know that Christianity could not be the white man's religion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But your response to trying to restore your own identity outside of Jesus and true history makes you think, which makes you fall into white supremacy. So what I do two things. I say, first off, Christianity started in modern day Saudi Arabia area, and you know, Saudi Arabia / Israel, and made its way into Africa, China, Asia, and Europe. And then I talk about the 1,000 years of theology and, you know, and development. And the earliest manuscripts we have are from Alexandria, Egypt. The earliest transmissions, if you look at the CSB, if you look at the NASB, if you look at the ESV, they use manuscripts that were transmitted by Africans, North Africans. So to even say that Christianity is the white man's religion doesn't make sense. But I can tell you who has a white man's religion. Nation of Islam has a white man religion because their leader was Farah Muhammad, a white man. Moorish Temple of Science has a white man's religion because Moorism is a form of, is a subsidiary of Islam, and Muhammad in the Hadith is called a white man. So the Kemetic community, they say Christianity is the white man's religion, but they are basing their teachings about Christianity on people like Helena Blavatsky, the Theosophical Society, and Alvin Boyd Kuhn, all those different people. So if anybody has a white man religion, it's all of them. So
wow, that's deep.
One thing about this conversation that I wanted to speak into even now is that I can hear some people listening to this and saying, I have never heard of any of these terms, any of these religions, Moorish Science Temple, what is that? And I think that's why urban apologetics is necessary.
Yeah.
Because what's happening is you're coming into a conversation that Black people are having to have. Because really, you know, studying Mormonism, absolutely, is it helpful? Yes. Studying Jehovah's Witnesses, is it helpful? Yes. Studying atheism, is it helpful? Yes. But when I go and get my locks twisted, I'm not having to deal with Mormonism. Absolutely. I'm having to deal with, why do you worship a white Jesus?
Yeah.
You know? And so there are particular apologetics that we as Black Christians have to develop when it comes to our context in particular. And so I think this is why this conversation is so necessary.
Yeah.
Because it equips me and it helps me to know what to do when I'm getting my hair done.
Yeah. That's good. I want to talk about particularly Hebrew Israelites, because I think that, you know, just being a Black man from the urban community, the Hebrew Israelites are on the rise, and I don't see their movement shrinking. I see it growing. Mm-hmm.
But can I ask you this? Who are they?
Yeah.
What do they believe?
And so the Hebrew Israelites are a group of people who believe that they are essentially ethnic Israel. They believe that they come from the lineage of, you know, Jesus, David. They believe that they are the true Israelites. They believe that when the Bible talks about how, you know, the children of Israel were shipped away and, you know, in ships and stuff like that.
In Deuteronomy,
they believe that essentially that was a transatlantic.
I only know that because of Kendrick.
Yeah, that was a transatlantic slave trade. and that, you know, and that they're essentially ethnic Israel. And so right now, a lot of, you know, we have denominations, they have camps. A lot of camps would tell you that they are a part of the Great Awakening, where they're realizing that they are the true children of Israel, and their mission is to show black people, the so-called black man, you know, that we are the original Israelites. Mm-hmm. They believe that, you know, and so they don't call themselves black Hebrew Israelites anymore. They call themselves Hebrew Israelites. Because they believe that, you know, Native Americans are part of ethnic Israel. They believe in Hispanics are part of ethnic Israel. They believe the so-called black man in America who is part of ethnic Israel. They don't believe that people like white people or Asians are part of that lineage. And they believe that, you know, they will
essentially
be damned to hell.
So in essence, if you are not black and brown and then awakened, you can't be saved? Is that I'm trying to parse this
now,
out.
So one of the things that I try not to do, and I'll let Eric speak to this because I learned a lot from him, is I try not to put all of what Hebrew Israelites believe in one basket, because there are, like, right. I said, there are many camps.
Yeah, they're not monolithic.
Yeah, right. They're not monolithic, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. at all. And so some camps don't believe in what other camps believe, but mm-hmm. I think essentially mm-hmm. what all of them believe is that they're part of ethnic Israel.
Okay.
And mm-hmm. so you know, a lot of black men and black women are getting a hold to this false theology, mm-hmm. for lack of for better terms. And they're leaving the faith in droves. And so I don't see, you know, this religion shrinking. I believe that it's going to continue to grow. And so, yeah, speaking to the black Hebrew Israelite, you know, movement, and how we as a church can combat that.
It's a big question.
Well, the movement actually comes from Pentecostalism. A lot of people don't know that. Hmm. That's why they have readers. The camps have readers because
Read.
That's
what they say. Yeah, absolutely. if you look at some really, really rural, like old school apostolic videos, the pastor don't even read the Bible.
No, he don't.
He preaches as the person reads. That comes from the church.
That's deep.
It's deep. But but anyway. So Hebrew Israelites, I mean, it had its wave in the, they wouldn't have called it, they would thought of themselves as rabbinic Jews in the 20s. I'm skipping over a lot of stuff. Fast forward, some of the guys that were in post-Harlem Renaissance, taught by some blacks who started their own synagogue from white Jews in Harlem, ended up started in the 60s, one west in Harlem, and basically began a different strand of what we call Hebrew Israelism that we know as camps, which those are the ones that be on the street, you know, and people jokingly, you know, make fun of their garb or whatever. And I don't want to do that. But their belief fundamentally is that all of the Hebrew Israelites, they'll pretty much agree that black people pretty much that came over in transatlantic slave trade, these are those even who quote unquote call themselves moderates. There's some old groups in Chicago. There's an old group that's like a mega church. Yeah. You can almost they almost feel like country, but it's interesting. And so that I forgot the group there. I got a presentation on it. But so they ultimately believe that we're all pretty much the descendants of Israelites. And that's why we got pushed in this transatlantic slave trade based on Deuteronomy 28:68. And but then when you go to the groups and you begin asking questions like for me, Preston, I really don't care if somebody calls themselves a Hebrew. I could care less.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I care less what you call yourself. My question, this is what I'm asking. I'm asking, okay, what is your canon for scripture? Yeah. Who is Jesus? Mm-hmm. How do you get saved? Now, when you start saying you're justified, like you'll have some groups now, they've changed. They used to say you're justified by the law. Then when you take into Romans 2:20, by works of the law, till no flesh be justified. So there are groups that believe that you're justified by faith, but you're sanctified by the law. But then when you take them to Galatians, and you know, they get confused in it.
Well, so you talked about, you know, them. I think I heard you say that they don't, essentially they don't believe that, you know, Jesus is God, and they deny
his No. You will find some moderates, but they're all. Let me just say this. Hebrew Israelism is working on it's a it's a working document with their theology.
Interesting. Okay.
So if you study it historically, and so there's no heresy for them except for what's Christian and what's white. Mm-hmm. So when you look at their Christology, it's Arianism, which basically believes that Jesus Christ is a created being, which that's what Mormons believe, that's what Jehovah's Witnesses believe.
Yeah.
Also, their view of scripture is very disjointed. So there are some that are what's called Tanakh only, which is Old Testament only, some that believe in the Gospels. Of course, a lot of them don't like Paul, because Paul pretty much challenges all of, I mean, he challenges their Judaizing. So they decanonize Paul a lot and then pick and choose, like the Nation of Islam, which verses are inspired and useful and which ones are not. But they viewed, most of them view the New Testament as a commentary on the Old Testament and believe that the law of Moses is the most hefty and most important part of scripture.
Wow.
I think for me, well, one, how, I have so many questions, because on one level, I'm asking the question of, what does a Christian need to read to equip themselves? Because one thing I've thought is, man, like Galatians itself, just having a knowledge of Galatians to me gives you a lot of context for how to, you know, defend against justification on the basis of ethnicity. But also, I also think about, but I'm a woman and they don't listen to people like me. And so it's like, what is even a woman to do if, you know, she wants to engage with this particular sect? Because I remember one time me and my friends, we had went up to them on the street because they was like yelling at us. And I tried to start talking and he was like, you don't get to talk to me. Like, you're a woman and you got on pants.
Yeah, man.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
and so I was just I'm good. So is that one of those things where, like, as a woman, I just got to pray and give them to, you know.
Depends. It depends on the camp, because it depends on the camp, but I think this is what is so important, Jackie, in your question, is this. We don't know our faith.
Yeah.
Before we even get to gender and all of that. In other words, having a strong understanding who Jesus is and where I can find it in the Bible is so important.
Yeah.
Having an understanding, like they, of course, talk stuff about the Trinity. You know, we're like, if you ask the average Christian, is you know, where do you find the Trinity in the Bible? Most of them would just say they believe it. And you say, no. Just give me a few verses that you kind of root your belief in. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I believe that a lot of what we're dealing with exposes is a lack of discipleship in the church.
Wow.
A lack of equipping for people having a basic confidence. I'm not saying everybody has to be a scholar, but I do think that when you run across people in these groups, they know what they believe better than we know what we're supposed to believe.
Should it be? It's true though.
And so the issue is, we have to begin as believers. We just got to make better disciples. All of these sermons on purpose is cool. All of these sermons on your season is cool. All these sermons on it's about to be a breakthrough. I sense in the atmosphere. There's about to be a move. You know, and all of that's fine. But when they get on the street, or they in their classroom in college, and they first go to college, and they get in a philosophy class, and they get gutted.
Mm. Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? You know, what have we put in the souls and minds and hearts of our people that helps them to be able to stand firm for the good, for the glory of God and the gospel, man?
And that's what I've been saying for the last couple of years. I think that the church, I think it's imperative that the church do a better job of teaching our young Christians and older Christians how to engage with the world, how to engage with different worldviews. Because I think what happens is when we have a framework for our faith, right? But then when you get out in the world and the first time your faith is challenged, you're rattled because nobody prepared you for it.
Yeah.
Nobody prepared you for it. And I think that's a tragedy.
But back to Jackie's question, the other part of her question about gender, I do think we have to be gender sensitive and apologetics. But for the most part, though, because sometimes those, I'm talking about with Hebrew Israelites in particular, because of the way they act. But when you get them one-on-one, usually, Jackie, they'll talk to a woman.
Yeah.
And they'll, and usually they put on a front in front of their crew. And we're talking about camps specifically, not the other groups, but yeah, that's a big deal. And don't even let me get on polygamy, how they bring one woman to Sabbath meeting 1 week and bring another woman to Sabbath meeting the next week. So that's a whole nother
discussion. The moral compass is bad.
Wow.
I wanted to ask this question because I read this article maybe a month ago. It was written in like 2018 about how Black women in particular are leaving the church and basically embracing African spiritualism. And what it makes me think of is because I don't see women, you know, flocking to Hebrew Israelism, but I do see Black men.
Yeah.
But I see a lot of women embracing, you know, just different gods and crystals and energy and all.
Ancestors.
And so it's interesting to me how even just like the pull for like finding your identity and kind of like these African kind of thought. I can't even explain my question. I guess what it is what is the attraction?
I understand exactly what you're saying.
What's the attraction?
I understand what you're saying. Yeah. So I don't know if you saw the live, me and Dr. Sarita did.
I did.
Like last week or a few weeks ago or whatever. But, you know, she does a chapter on Black women and the appeal of the Black conscious community in the book. And one of the things that we were talking about that she was saying is that the church has dropped the ball. Like they have dropped the ball on affirming Black identity. They also dropped the ball on affirming women. Even both in egalitarian and complementarian spaces on both. And how we dog feminism, but don't affirm the ways in which feminism does for women what the church should be doing for women.
That's
affirming her femininity, that women can be theologians, that women can teach, that women can preach. And, you know, your differences on where and when and the who, you know, we can work through that. And we don't have to, you know, hate on each other as Christians because we have different views on function. But value, we should be exalting the value of women. Because she was saying, you know, white men represent manhood. White women represent womanhood. Black men represent Blackness. Black women represent nothing.
Wow.
And when she said that, it was the most, I mean, I had to stop the live for a second and just sit back. And she said, we're not the prototype for anything in culture because of how culture has treated us. It's the church's job, based on James and based on Genesis chapter 1, to restore the dignity of anybody, not just Black people and women, but anybody who's dealing with dignity destruction. That's why you see in the Old Testament, it talks a lot about, like in Psalm 9, and it talks about it in Isaiah chapter 1, it talks about it in Isaiah chapter 10, it talks a lot about widows and orphans, because in their society, those were the people on the bottom of the dignity strand. So whoever's at the bottom of the dignity strand in a society, they're supposed to be, you know, like I'm a Star Wars dude, right? And so when their ship getting beat up and it's about to go down, you know what I'm saying? They'll say, put all power through the forward thrusters. And, you know, and so they reroute the power, get the power so they can land. You know, the church needs to reroute its power to affirming the dignity of Black women.
Wow.
That's good. That's really good.
That's strong.
I have a question. So I talk to a lot of Black men who follow the channel or just follow you, follow me. And a lot of times they're discouraged, not because they have the tall task of, you know, defending their faith. But when you are in the Black urban context, a lot of the times you're not just merely defending your faith. You're defending your personhood. You're defending your lineage. You're defending, who you are. And so I think in a lot of ways, you know, the Black apologist or the Black apologetic looks different than, you know, our white counterparts. Right. Because we have to, you know, we have to defend who we are. And so what would you say to the Black Christian who's essentially tired, who's tired of having to not only defend the God that they serve, but defend the person that they are? What would you say to encourage that man or that woman?
That's a good question.
Yeah, one of the things that I would, I would encourage people with is, first off, we're really in a space now, which I'm loving what you all are doing, the content, the people like you all and many others, younger folk are putting out that can help be an encouragement to saying I'm not alone. One of the best, I remember Impact in 1994 when I went to Impact Movement, and I went, it was in Atlanta, right downtown at the Omni Hotel. And I remember going to Impact, and I had never, I thought I was Elijah, and God was like, nah, it's 2,500 of you in here, bro, you know? Wow. And so I'm looking around like 2,500 black men and women from college campuses all over the country who are standing for Christ and who are fighting the same war I'm fighting. Mm. And so, man, I think that's the key. First is getting yourself, whether it's online or geographically, around people that let you know you're not crazy.
Wow, that's good. Yeah.
You know, that to me, that's the first thing, because once you know you're not crazy, then you could take a sigh of relief and begin building your arsenal.
Yeah, that's good. That's good, yeah, because I think what I hear a lot is, you know, for the people, I did a live last week, just basically, you know, answering questions that a lot of people had, and I randomly allow people to come on a live with me, and this one guy, he was very sincere, he was out in Compton, and he was basically just emotional, and he said, literally, you, Jackie, Eric Mason, and the AND campaign are the handful of people that I look to for affirmation of who I am as a black Christian.
Wow.
And what else did he say? He said a bunch of stuff. But
I wasn't listening.
But basically, what, you know, we're the people that he looked to for affirmation. And I think that's the a big part of the problem, that it's a lack of representation.
Mm.
And so I think that if we can find spaces, even if we could create spaces where we can, you know, have so many people represented to encourage us, that would just be big.
I got a selfish question. Your conference coming back? Because that's a real good place to go to be encouraged.
Yeah, it is. What we're doing is we're reworking it so it's an online hub, and the online hub leads to a conference versus the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
And so what the Gospel Coalition has for its constituency, we want to develop that type of platform for black folk.
That's wise.
Black Christians.
That's wise.
And so that means it'll be a one-stop shop. It's not just apologetics, but everything you can think of.
Yeah.
It's going to be crazy for us. And I want to even get to the point, we have church recommendations in different areas, so that as people are moving in career, we have some solid churches that are biblically sound, yet also haven't forgotten about the systemic need of blacks.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Yep.
Amen. Well, I mean, thank you, Pastor Eric Mason, for joining us today. We really, I was encouraged.
Yeah, I was encouraged, man. Thank you, man. Thank you for just leading the way, for being an example for not just black Christians, but just Christians in general.
Yeah.
Being solid, being, you know, being committed to, like, just biblical excellence, and not just being lazy in your approach. I think that it's been obvious me, you know, following you throughout the years, that you've spent a lot of time, a large majority of your life, making sure you give us accurate information about the Bible and who Jesus is. And so for that, I thank you.
And I want to add, since we, you know, building up and edifying the Eric Mason saint, I think both of you do this very well, and Lisa Fields, which is, you show people that apologetics can be loving, you know, because when I hear Eric talk, when I hear you talk, when I hear Lisa talk, I really don't hear people that are learning just for the sake of learning.
Yeah.
As apologetics has typically been seen. Yeah. It's like, no, I'm thinking about people in my neighborhood, in my context that I care about, and that I want them to come to the knowledge of the truth. This is why I'm learning what I learned. You know what I'm saying?
So,
like, that's a whole nother thing.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why I'm so excited to read your book, and because I love apologetics, but a lot of the apologetics books that I've read so in the past, they've been so informational driven, and just so like, let me teach you how to like do these tactics, but they don't teach you how to like really engage and love people.
Yeah.
And our apologetic, we shouldn't just do apologetics just to do apologetics, just to learn a whole bunch of information. It should be evangelistic. It should be a way to essentially make disciples, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the Great Commission, I think it's not often thought about sadly, when we think about apologetics, we think about how can we stump somebody in an argument and not win somebody's soul. And so, man, for that, I've been a huge advocate of just your work. And so thank you, brother, for what you do.
All right. So in the show notes, in the show notes, I'll have the link to Urban Apologetic, Eric Mason's most recent work, and additional resources so that y'all can, you know, help this man get all his royalties because he got a lot of babies.
Yeah, buy this book.
Because royalties are a blessing in Jesus' name.
Hey, she had it.
Don't. All right, sir. Good talking to you.
Peace.
Likewise.